What is going on, everybody? Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Got another edition of the Sports Card Show podcast, and I'm excited to be here. No interview guests yet. I've been promising that for about a month now. And those that are waiting to come on the show, I am very excited to bring them on. But as usual, I am somewhat lazy in terms of coordinating that whole thing. So I promise I'll get to that soon. And we'll have some other opinions and some fresh opinions and some fresh ideas and maybe some fresh things to talk about. So we'll have that to look forward to, as I'm sure most of you are. On today's show, what you have to look forward to, I've got just some interesting topics that I wanted to touch on in the hobby. We have something that goes along with our show last week. National Treasures came out. National Treasures football came out. It's one of the sets, obviously, a lot of people look forward to throughout the whole year, whether or not you're buying the boxes or you're buying the single cards or whatever. It's kind of a fun set to kind of check out and kind of see what's going on in National Treasures. Well, interesting that at least the last time I checked, which I believe was yesterday, no two key rookies, the two rookies that everybody's looking for, are not in there. And so we'll talk about that. Talk about a card show going on this weekend. Very excited to be my, I don't know how many years I've been in a row, but very exciting. I'm excited to go back, so I'll be going to that. I'll talk about card show, going to a card show, something I've talked about before, but it's always fun to kind of revisit. You know, a lot of you probably have local card shows in your area, or you're like me, you attend one or two a year, so it's fun to kind of discuss that. Talk about Topps doing their first round of group breaks that they, inside Topps Series 1, there were these redemption cards for pretty much all their products that they're coming out with this year, most of them, and you pulled them, and it said the Yankees on it in museum collection, or it said, you know, you get the Rays in triple threads. And so they did their first round of group breaks, so I'll talk about that. Chris Bryant had some people on Twitter. There was some question going back, should you sell Chris Bryant? The Super Fractor popped up, and I think a repackage company that's going to buy it and repackage it, it bought it. So that's probably the only, when only the repack, it seems like these big high dollar cards, only the repackaged people buy it. That should show you that the demand for these high dollar, big dollar cards really isn't there. Since the only people, the people that bought the Strasburg, the people that buy a lot of these higher-end cards, I think even the Abreu last year, are people that are then trying to make a buck off it very quickly, typically. So it should tell you a little something about the demand going on in the hobby for the very high-end cards. So we'll talk about that. And we'll continue our vintage segment. I forgot about that like on the last two shows, but I wanted to touch on basketball before we move on to baseball and football. I'll probably move to football next, and then finally we'll touch on vintage baseball cards, which is kind of like, well, maybe I have the whole show on that. I wanted to touch on just briefly, like building a portfolio vintage basketball. I know a lot of people kind of skip over basketball. They don't watch basketball, or they only watch basketball in the 80s and 90s, which is fine. But maybe if maybe you have a lot of vintage, you have a lot of exposure to vintage baseball, and maybe you have a lot of football. You have Joe Montanas and Dan Marinos and stuff like that. Well, I've identified four key cards where if you bought all four, it's going to cost you a little bit of money. Not as much as a Chris Bryant, Super Fractor, but certainly it'll cost you, well into the four figures unless they're mangled and chewed up by a dog. But talk about four cards that you might want to think about adding to your collection, or maybe one of the four, or add them slowly over time, which I think would be not necessarily a really wise investment or a savvy investment, but a little bit safer investment than certainly buying cases of National Treasures football or a product that just comes out or somebody like Chris Bryant. So we'll talk about that. And that's about it. Oh, right off the top of the bat, I've been getting a lot of emails. I've been tweeting about stocks. I've been talking a little bit about it on the show. I've been getting actually a lot more feedback on stocks, believe it or not, than sports cards. And, That's good. That's great. I want to open that discussion. I don't want to take 30 minutes here and discuss stocks. I could do my own YouTube video on it at some point. Maybe I'll do a series of podcasts, or I'll start like a once a month podcast at some point. I still think I'm learning. I'm still learning the stock market. I'm still learning how to become a disciplined investor myself. And so I still don't think I'm there yet. I'm getting there. Close. Been several years. But I wanted to touch on just really briefly, kind of iron out some of the points I had, so I'm clear on everything I'm saying. Number one thing with the stock market, I want all of you to know that you are absolutely 100% smart enough and you are capable of investing your own money. In fact, you often would do a better job than if you were to pay somebody or get the advice from somebody else. And so I recommend all of you to take an active approach. And the way you do that, this is a tip you're not going to hear on CNBC or Bloomberg or in the Wall Street Journal. Nobody's going to tell you this tip, but I think it's a very important one. In fact, I think I've read it in a book before. I don't think I've made this tip up myself, but I've validated it over the years. I suggest you pick a couple stocks. Sure, you have your company 401k, you have a pension, you have maybe some money that you inherited or sitting in an account somewhere. That's fine. That's fine. And that's great, actually. But I encourage you to take an active approach in at least a couple stocks. And in the beginning, I strongly recommend you stick to blue chip stocks. Big, big, giant companies. Google, Apple, Disney is a great stock. God, Disney is like an amazing stock. There are other ones. General Electric, AT&T, Verizon. Gosh, there's lots of companies out there. The shares themselves, don't confuse blue chip with expensive shares. Tesla shares are really expensive. I don't consider that a blue chip. Would I want a Tesla? Hell yeah. If somebody wants to send me a Tesla, or if I had the money to buy one, I would buy one. Believe me. But I don't consider that a blue chip stock, even though shares are like, I don't know, $200 or something. I suggest start with a core group of stocks, something huge, Disney, Google, Apple, something that everybody uses every day and that should be around in many, many years. I suggest avoiding retail. Look at Sears, look at JCPenney's, look at Best Buy, look at Radio Shack. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind at some point, maybe not in my lifetime, maybe not in the next 20 years, but Walmart, Target, all these other companies that basically just buy goods from somebody else and resells them. It's not a good business model. It's not a good business model. I don't consider Target a blue chip. I don't consider Walmart a blue chip kind of stock. I would stay away from those kind of stocks. But something that people use every single day, it's kind of in the backbone and the fabric of the country, something like Google, something like Apple, I certainly recommend. And here's my point. Now I'm going to get to my point. I strongly recommend investing enough money to make you nervous. You're not going to hear that tip very often. But if $500 isn't very much to you, you're going to buy the shares for $500 and you're going to forget about it. You're not going to care. You're not going to care if not. Nike's another really good, if you want like a brand, Nike is a really good one. You're going to pay for these stocks. Not going to get them cheap. And there's a reason for that. They're good companies. They're going to be around. They make a lot of money and they keep making a lot of money. But I suggest buying enough shares, putting enough investment in to make you nervous a little bit. So if $1,000 makes you nervous, do it. It's going to make you pay attention. It's going to make you wake up in the morning and see what Disney stock is doing. It's going to make you wake up every quarter and say, hey, did they raise their dividend? The CEO's leaving. Their latest movie franchise isn't doing as well as Frozen did. It's going to make you care. If you only did $40, you're not going to care. So I started with 20. I remember depositing my first $20 in my own account. I had other accounts that my parents set up and I didn't care about. But I started with $20, and that was a lot of money to me. A lot of money. 7, 8, 9 years ago. And I was nervous. And I was reading through the reports and all that stuff. And so that's my number one tip for you today. If you're just beginning investing, I know hopefully you have a 401k. Hopefully you have some money here and there. It's okay to have multiple investments. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't put your whole $10,000 in Disney. Don't put your whole $10,000 in Nike. But put enough to make you nervous, to make you think, man, this is a lot of money. At that same time, avoid penny stocks. You'll see me tweeting about penny stocks. I actually get paid. I was invited by a financial website to start writing about stocks. And I could write about anything. I could write about how great Google is. I could write about how great Apple stock is and look like a genius. Oh, look, Apple's up 20% since I recommended. I'm a genius. That's really easy stuff. I write about penny stocks. $20 million companies. $10 million companies, companies that are tiny, tiny, tiny. But I don't recommend you do that. Don't read my articles and go invest in my stocks. Don't read my tweets and go invest in those stocks. Those are very, very high risk stocks. And those are a very minute portion of my whole investment portfolio. I should probably preface this disclosure. I own Disney stock. I own Google stock. I own Apple, a lot of Apple stock. I own Exxon Mobil stock. I own a lot of like very, very large companies. And I'm holding AT&T. I'm holding them for a very long period of time. My time horizon is 20, you know, I'm 30 years old. So my time horizon's 25 years. I kind of can assume I can project out that Disney, it was popular 50 years ago. It's probably going to be popular 50 years from now. Since they seem to keep coming out with some kind of cartoon or something that people really appreciate and really like. So I suggest all of you do that as well. It's very, very, very important. Now, if you have no interest in managing your money, pay somebody else to do it. Don't pay them a lot of money. 1% or less off the top every year is about max you need to pay somebody. Hedge funds are in the 10, 15, 20 higher percent. You don't need to pay that. Moving on. Hopefully that gets your juices flowing right in the beginning. I want to open up. There's not enough discussion. They don't teach you to invest and manage your money in school. They don't teach you it in college. I went to business school. They taught me about PE ratios and quick ratios and blah, 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 blah. None of it makes any sense until you do it yourself. Pretty much self-taught myself the last 7 or 8 years I've been doing this. And you can do it out there. Trust me. The guys on CNBC and Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal, they talk all fancy and they dress in their suits and they put a bunch of flashy numbers and lights on the screen. They want you to think it's complicated because that's how they make their money. That's how Wall Street makes their money. If you get anything out of what I just said in the last 10 minutes, understand that Wall Street wants you to think investing money is hard. It's complicated. It's only for smart people. It's only for real savvy people, really rich people. It's not. They want you to think that way because that's how they make money. They make money on ignorance. And if you spend a little time, do a little homework, I know a lot of you guys have kids and families and things, really important things to do. Much more important things than just listening to this podcast and doing your daily life. I know a lot of you guys do really important things. Some of you guys serve this country in the military. Some of you have very important jobs. Some of you guys may not have a job. Doesn't matter. You do more important things in your life. But just realize that Wall Street feeds on ignorance, feeds on people like unsavvy, unsophisticated investors. And it's not right. You guys are smart enough to figure it out. Don't fall into the trap that, hey, I need to pay this guy 4% to manage my money, or hey, I'm going to take this hot tip because this guy is saying it on TV. Do your research. Invest in very strong companies in the beginning that are just plain as day. It's obvious. I don't need to have a podcast. I don't need to write articles and get paid to tell you how good Apple stock is. It's pretty freaking obvious. So moving right along, let's, boom, 15 minutes in, finally get to sports cards. National Treasures, folks. This goes along to what we talked about last week. I talked about last week, and I got some feedback on the line. Maybe I was a little harsh last week. Maybe I was a little grumpy or whatever. But National Treasures football came out, and who's missing? Oh, Odell Beckham Jr. I don't know why you'd be all excited. He's going to be garbage in a couple years. Odell Beckham, nobody's going to care about him. Like, literally in 2 years, nobody's going to care. Really. Teddy Bridgewater, You know, there's been lots of quarterbacks that have been, you know, decent or hot. I mean, Christian Ponder cards were hot his rookie year, too. So we'll see. Maybe they're building something in Minnesota. Maybe they're building something again. And, I mean, New York's already won a Super Bowl. I think my brother was on the show. The Giants have already won 2 Super Bowls. Odell Beckham Jr. is going to have to break records and do crazy stuff. And the Giants don't have that kind of offense. Last time I checked, Eli Manning, he's good. He's great. He's won 2 Super Bowls. But he's not a throw it down the field 400-yard type guy. Neither is their offense. Not to mention they play in New York, which is like freezing, snowing most of the time. So it's going to be hard for him to catch balls late in the year. Unless they deflate them. So, anyways, National Treasures football. Apparently, the first, I've seen lots of theories. Oh, the first wave of National Treasures doesn't have Odell Beckham in it. And oh, the second wave of National Treasure cases that come out, like that even is truly a thing. No, these companies, you got to understand, Panini doesn't print National Treasure, box it up, and then ship it as the first wave. Oh, and then they box up the next wave and send that out. That's not how it works. Panini doesn't even ship these things out. The company that ships National Treasures out barely even knows who Odell Beckham is. Oh, they're hand collated and nobody cares. This was some kind of error, some kind of oversight, and it just goes to my point on the last show. You are a fool. You are an absolute fool if you pre-order this stuff. The only thing, we talked about it on the last show. What the heck does anybody pre-order these days? Ferraris? Oh, I could see pre-ordering a Ferrari or getting on a wait list for a Ferrari. Getting on the wait list or pre-ordering your Green Bay Packers season tickets, since there aren't any for sale. I could see pre-ordering a Tesla. The next model Tesla's coming out. And since they only have certain amount of capacity, and since you want to be the coolest guy at your country club, you got to have the newest and greatest, so you pre-order it. People pre-order video games, but you don't need to. It's kind of just something people do. Oh, I'll pre-order the game because I'm getting it anyways. And the thing with like a video game or a Ferrari or something like that, if it doesn't meet your expectations, especially within the first, you know, few days, I don't know, I've never bought a Ferrari. But I can imagine if I bought my Ferrari and I was driving around and I didn't like it, I could take it back. I could call Ferrari. Maybe they're not going to give me my $300,000 back, but I'm sure they'll be accommodating. Or if I pre-order a video game and it freezes or there's glitches, the company will either patch it and fix it and the game will work as intended, or I can go exchange that game for something else. There is absolutely no reason to pre-order baseball cards, football cards, basketball cards. It never sells out. To give you a little insight, the distributors, they, quote, allocate this stuff. And typically what they do is they make up some kind of rule. Oh, you'll get allocated National Treasures based on how many boxes of Gold Standard you bought or based on how many boxes of Prestige you bought. And they'll make up these kind of arbitrary rule. And what they'll do is the people that were stupid enough to pre-order a crappy product, yeah, they'll get their cases of NT. But then the distributor is going to hold all back all this NT. And they're going to charge you basically full retail price for it the week later. When, oh, only the four breakers that stupidly pre-ordered gold standards are breaking NT. Now you look like a fool. Oh, now I got to call my distributor and pay full price for it. It's just a game they play to get more money out of you. If you're a dealer, Panini is not your friend. They don't care about you. The distributor is not your friend. They don't care about you. Panini and the distributor are on the same team. They're on the same team and they're trying to beat you. They're trying to beat you for all your money. And the way you win the game is to stop buying this stuff. Stop pre-ordering this stuff. Because it often goes down, it gets recalled, it doesn't have what it's supposed to have in it, doesn't have Odell Beckham Jr. rookie cards in it, it doesn't have Teddy Bridgewater autograph rookie cards in it. And you get burned time and time and time again. Flawless. Supposed to have game used. It says it on the card, but it's not. Time and time and time and time again, this happens. I don't know how many times it has to happen for people to wake up and realize it's a bad idea to buy this stuff, pre-order it, and buy it the day it comes out. If a product gets released and it's great, who cares if you have to pay a little bit more for it? I'd much rather pay $600 for a box of National Treasures than $350 for a piece of crap box of National Treasures for a product that I know is garbage. The day it comes out, now I'm stuck with this $300 piece of cardboard that isn't worth anything. I'd much rather wait and say, hey, is it garbage or is it great? And if it's great, I'll pay $600 for it. It'll be worth it. That's what I don't think people comprehend. If the price goes up, it'll be worth it to buy it. It'll be more, I don't know if it'll be worth it, but it'll be more worth it than overpaying for it. So stop pre-ordering this stuff. Stop supporting the people that are pre-ordering this stuff. A lot of it is group breakers and stuff like that. If you pre-ordered and pre-bought Viking spots and New York Giants spots, you just got burned. Unless your breaker is like got the moral compass of Jesus Christ, chances are they didn't refund you or didn't give you a portion of your buy-in back. Chances are they didn't do that. They told you, hey, it's the luck of the draw, man. So there's absolutely no reason to pre-order any of this product. And I suggest you guys get on that train. Let's train our fellow collectors this. This is going to make the hobby better. It's going to force the companies to stop doing. Maybe it was intentional, Panini. I don't know if this was intentional or not. If Panini put out a first wave, quote, first wave of National Treasures with no Odell Beckham and Teddy Bridgewater in it, so they could send out a second wave that would be worth money. That doesn't make any sense to me. Given how stupid that company is and how stupidly they configure a lot of this higher end stuff. It's more along the lines of stupidity, laziness, unorganization, lack of leadership. It's not any foresight into, oh, let's screw everybody and save the Odell Beckhams until later. Panini's probably not saying a lot on this issue because they probably don't know. They pay somebody else to make these cards and send them out. So let's stop supporting them. Wait until the product comes out. Then judge it. And then determine if it's worth your hard-earned money. I mean, a box of this stuff is $300-something. Guys, that's a lot of money. Maybe not to you. Maybe to some of you guys out there, you're balling and you're killing it. $300 isn't anything to you. But from where I'm from, $300 is a car payment. A week's of rent. $300 will buy you an amazing dinner for a whole family. You could buy a really nice piece of jewelry for $300. There's a lot of things you can buy with $300. You can buy a share and a half of Apple. Actually, 2.5. You could buy 10 shares of something like AT&T and they'll send you money every 3 months. You could buy 10 shares and they're going to send you about $7 every 3 months. Just give AT&T, buy 10 shares of AT&T, and they're going to send you money every 3 months. So will Disney. So will Apple. So will a lot of companies. They'll give you money just for buying the shares. You didn't even, when you bought that $300, you didn't even give that to the company. You bought those shares off somebody else. But for owning those shares, you get money. I don't think any sports card out there has ever done that, where you've bought it and then they've sent you money 3 months later and for every 3 months after that. There are a lot of stocks that'll send you money every month. Typically, they're real estate investment trusts or bonds. You buy them and they'll send you money every month. I have several funds that send me money every month. You know, it's only $4 or $5 here and there. If I had $50,000, $100,000 invested in them, yeah, it'd be a lot more. It'd be thousands of dollars. But it's in proportion to how much I have invested. So wait and see, guys. Wait and see. Next time a high-end set comes out, just wait. If it's a $300 box wholesale and it's a great product and it goes up to $5, who cares if you missed it? Make the companies prove to you over a very long period of time that when the products come out, they go up in price. It's been just the opposite over the past 10, almost 20 years with these companies. They'll come out with a product and it'll go down in price. So the smart thing to do is just wait. I encourage you all to do that. I think I want to emphasize that after the last show. Moving on, card show. There's a card show this weekend in, if you're in the Northern California area, at the Cow Palace, not the most, glamorous spot in the Bay Area, but nevertheless, very fun event that I enjoy going to. I think there's always big signers there. The Giants have like a home weekend that weekend always. And so, you know, guys like Madison Bumgarner come over and a lot of the Giants come over. Typically, I think last year, maybe even Joe Montana was there. There's always guys like Jose Canseco, and there's guys, I think Mike Tyson might even be on the schedule. You know, you want to double check on all this stuff because these guys, last minute things happen, they may or may not show up. So you might want to double check on all that, but that's part of the allure of card shows. I don't want you to think if you show up to this card show for the first time, it's nothing like the National. It's nothing like a massive, big, maybe 80s or late 90s, early 90s card show. It's probably You know, maybe a dozen, you know, a dozen, 10 rows or so of dealers, and they tend to be very similar year after year. If you go year after year, it tends to be similar. But I always seem to find good deals there. Last year, there was a box of, it was like $2, I think it was $1 or $2 PSA cards. And they were like, I mean, typically that's, you know, it may not be that good of a deal, but there was a lot of like Jordans, Brett Favre's, Ken Griffey Jr.'s, a lot of the stuff in there. A lot of the stuff was graded like PSA. It was undergraded. Like it was a 90s card or a 2000 card that was graded PSA 7 or 6. But the card itself was still worth a dollar. If you go on, check out my cards, you go on eBay, just a raw version of that card would sell from 50 cents to a dollar. So I wasn't getting a very bad deal, especially Michael Jordan cards. And I got some hockey cards out of there. I've sold a lot of them on Check Out My Cards. What I do is when I go to these shows, I buy a bunch of stuff. And since I'm lazy, since I'm usually taking Uber or I'm taking, you know, the BART to, which is like a, not really a subway. It's like a train system, basically, that they have, a rapid transit train system that they have in the Bay Area. So I'm taking that back to, you know, I live in the middle of Central California. So I don't want to come home with a bunch of cards. You know what I mean? And my wife doesn't really want me to come home with a bunch of cards. I don't have a lot of cards anyways. So I send them in to check my cards and I resell them over the year. And I think I've done pretty well. You know, I probably, you know, I don't know if I've made money or really lost a lot of money. I would guess it's somewhere right in the middle of break even. But it's fun to go. I will pick up some, I guess people call it like PC or personal collection. I typically look for Bengals cards because it's, one, it's the off season, and two, it's out here in California. So it's like a win-win. So nobody cares about football right now, and nobody cares about the Bengals, especially out here in California. So I can get them for prices typically cheaper than what I can get even on eBay. I can typically, if I wanted to, and make $2 or whatever, I can buy the cards and I can put them on eBay and make a little money. But so I build up my collection there. I'm not buying Warrior. Everybody has full price on their Warriors cards and Sacramento Kings cards, and certainly San Francisco Giants cards are not cheap. You know, they're asking $1 for Buster Posey base cards, and people pay it. People buy it. 49er cards, Colin Kaepernick cards go for a lot of money. So that's part of, you know, I've talked about that a lot on the show. If you go to card shows, what I like to do is, if you're not very specific, if you're looking for like 1971 Topps, centered 1971 Topps cards, and you're trying to complete your set, certainly you're going to, you know, you're going to have a focus. But if you're kind of like me and you're kind of open and you just want to get a good deal, you know, I suggest buying off season. So right now it's, you know, football off season, time to buy football, and buy not the home team. So buy the team the farthest away from the city you're in. So it works out perfectly for me. I'm a Bengals fan. I like collecting Bengals cards. It's really the only cards I typically collect. I haven't been collecting Lakers cards in a while. I might next year. I might, you know, if people got cheap prices on Julius Randle cards, I might take a shot on one or two of those, hoping that he comes back from his injury. I know the Lakers are purposely losing, and they're doing a really good job at that. To get a high pick, maybe I'll get excited if they get one of these guys from Kentucky or one of these, you know, guys that we just saw in the tournament. I might get excited about Lakers cards next year. But it's hard to get excited about your NBA team when they've won, you know, half dozen to a dozen championships since I've been on this earth. And now they're purposely losing. So nevertheless, the NBA has been very exciting. And I've been very stressed out about a fantasy basketball season. My fantasy basketball season just is going to come down to the second half of the last day of the season. And so I've been sweating for like 2 weeks. Moving on. So card shows are fun. I recommend anybody in this Northern California, most of you guys have already gone, I encourage you guys to go. I always have fun. Don't expect to, you know, have dozens and millions of dealer tables and get all these huge deals. But it's fun to go. For me, it's fun to go. I don't go to card shops. I don't travel to the national. I don't really, you know, I don't shop on eBay a lot for baseball cards. I've been buying a lot of coins on eBay, but I don't buy a lot of, I don't buy a lot of cards on eBay. I almost never buy cards on eBay. So I buy a lot of cards on Check On My Cards, but I never hold them. I never have them in my hands. So it's fun to go to the card show. It's fun to walk around. It's fun to see the dealers that are there year after year. As that's a sign of, hey, at least they're surviving. At least they're there. And it's always fun. In the Bay Area, there's always, you got to travel a little bit to get to really good food, good restaurants. But, if you have a car, if you're, you can take the bus or you can take a taxi or an Uber in the Bay Area and get to some really good food. And so that's what I look forward to. Moving on. Just briefly, Topps, if you're not aware, they're on their YouTube page. They did their first group break. It was Series 1 baseball, and then they did Museum, which I guess was kind of a preview, and it kind of replaced. If you pulled a Topps tribute, if you pulled out of Topps Series 1 a tribute break, so say you pulled the Blue Jays for Topps tribute, you actually get the Blue Jays in Museum collection. Hope that made sense. And boy, if you contacted Topps, hopefully they'll communicate that to you as well. But I thought it looked pretty good. They had the guys from Blowout doing the break, and I thought they kind of sped through it like it was a normal break. They were trying to power through it like a normal break. I think the if I were to give some constructive criticism to Topps, I'd say, hey, do the breaks differently. Try to be different. One thing I liked is it was on YouTube. I don't know why any of you group breakers go to Breakers TV or whatever. YouTube looked fine to me. And you can take, I'm pretty sure you can embed that into your own website. And that to me would be very powerful. Instead of sending all your traffic to Breakers TV where they can easily click to another breaker. I mean, that to me, I would never want to break on Breakers TV because when one click, they can change the channel. I'm sure, yeah, they can do that on YouTube, but at least they'd be on your own website. I wouldn't even send them to YouTube. If I was Topps, I'd have tops.com/whatever. And I'd embed my stream there. I'd promote that link. I'd say, hey, you got to go to tops.com/stream. And there would be the embedded YouTube video, and then you can embed a chat box if you wanted to. It's really simple, not that hard. Then you can monitor all that analytics. You could have a sign-up box right there. You could have your social links right there. You could have everything you have on Breakers TV on your own website. And then so people aren't one click away. So I thought that was good. But if I were to give them some constructive criticism, I'd say slow it down a little bit. Cater to a more casual audience. The people that pull these redemption cards or even buy them on the secondary market, they don't want you to power through the break super fast and get it over with and get on to the next break. That's their one break with Topps. They want to see the cards. They want to see front and back, especially a museum. I wanted to see front and back. And kind of talk about the cards a little bit more. Spend a little bit more time. I know these guys, they probably had to travel to New York. And they're probably under, they've got to get back probably that same day. I understand there's time, there's only so much time you can put into these things. But they kind of powered through it like a normal break. And I'd probably recommend them slow it down a little bit. Make it a little bit more entertaining. Cater to a non-breaking audience. Don't act like this is your normal audience tuning in. It may or may not be, but I would cater to a more casual audience that might be more interested in seeing the cards, might be interested in seeing what they get. Because if you're just powering through and then getting to the hit and showing the hit and moving on, the people that have those base cards, they might want to know what they're getting. They might want to have inventory since Topps is so unorganized, sending out redemption cards and putting out sets that have UV contamination. Maybe I don't get all my cards. Maybe I want to know what's coming to me. So when it gets sent to me, I know that I got it all. Chris Bryant, I think, is just the latest, flavor of the week in baseball. And for those of you that have been around collecting for a long time, gosh, we can go way back to flavors of the week in 1990 tops and 1989 tops and before that and after that. There's all different flavors of the hot prospects supposed to be the greatest, you know, the next Babe Ruth, the next Willie Mays, the next Mickey Mantle. And not many of them do it. And even if they, here's my point with Chris Bryant. Even if the player does basically everything in their first, look at Buster Posey, guys. And maybe I'm a little biased to Buster Posey because I'm a fan of the Giants. But let me tell you what, Buster Posey has, before Buster Posey came to our team, we didn't win crap. We had guys that were on steroids and could hit 70 home runs and guys, not just Barry, we had guys hit 30 home runs and 40 home runs. Roberto Santiago looked like a swimsuit model and he was like 40 when he was on the team. Marvin Bernard hit home runs. Rich Aurelia hit home runs. We had all this extra help from Balco. And we didn't win anything. Buster Posey has not won one championship. He hasn't won two championships. He's won three championships in 5 years. And he's won an MVP. And maybe looks and kind of perception have something to do with it. I mean, I'm comfortable enough as a man saying, hey, Chris Bryant's a good-looking guy. So is Buster Posey. They're both, I mean, I don't want to open up any arguments here. They're both white males. Good-looking young white males. Clean-shaven, clean-cut. Basically the ideal baseball player, baseball prospect. Clean cut, well-spoken, can play baseball. At least we can say that about Buster Posey. We know what he can do. Our Buster Posey, if cards just went up and up and up, Buster Posey, only millionaires and billionaires would be able to collect Buster Posey. Only billionaires would be able to collect Derek Jeter if cards only went up and up. Only billionaires would be able to collect Michael Jordan cards if they went up and up and up. So that's my point with Chris Bryant. Bryce Harper was even more hyped. And even more people are aware of Bryce Harper. And his cards don't go up and up. Look at Mike Trout. Mike Trout hasn't won the championships Posey has, but he's accomplished almost everything else individually. His cards don't go up and up and up and up and up exponentially. Yeah, his cards might trend up just a little bit, maybe a point or two every year because he hits 30 home runs and he's one of the best players in the majors. And Posey cards, certainly when they win World Series and things like that, they go up a little bit. Madison Bumgarner, we've seen, just exponentially goes up. When he did something historic, so I think it was well justified. But they'll come back down to earth. I'm sure they've had a little bit, and Bumgarner got roughed up the other day. They'll come back down to earth. The same with Chris Bryant. Even if he wins three championships for the Cubs. Trust me, I know the Cubs are waiting for a championship, but we were waiting for a championship too here in San Francisco. Not to mention, I know there's a lot of wealth in Chicago, but I could be wrong about this, but there's a hell of a lot of wealth in San Francisco. There are companies that are pieces of crap that are getting, that raise $40 million or, we raised $50 because we have a website. It's tech bubble 2.0 going on right now. It's been going on. There's a lot of money flowing through the Bay Area. A lot of people can afford Buster Posey cards, Buster Posey autographs. There's a lot of people that can afford to meet Buster Posey personally and bring him over, have Toyota sponsor him to come to their little league. So it's not that Buster Posey doesn't play on an unpopular team. It's not that he hasn't had a lot of success. It's not that there's no collectors without any money. In fact, it's all lined up perfectly, and his cards aren't worth millions of dollars. So that's the that's the point I want to make about Chris Bryant. Yeah, he might come up and he might be a great player. He might be Mike Trout. He might be Buster Posey. But look what's happened to those guys' cards. They don't go up and up and up and up regardless. And the takeaway you can get with cards, and more importantly, the stock market. People always say buy low and sell high. I actually don't think that makes a lot of sense, but I think a better way to say that is sell greed, buy fear. May not work out as well in baseball cards, because when a guy's career starts the downward path, he might be closer to retirement. He might have done something really bad. An Aaron Hernandez type situation. But I think the sell greed is very important to do in sports cards. And I think right now we're seeing kind of the greed of a minor league ball player that wasn't even good enough. Let's be real. Chris Bryant was not good enough to make the major league team. I don't care what he's doing in the minor leagues now. I don't care what he did in spring training. If he was good enough, he would have made the team, period. Maybe the Cubs want to develop him. Maybe they want to do whatever. But the Cubs aren't in a position to just turn away great players. I'm sure he'll be up to the major leagues this year. I'm sure he'll get some at-bats. I'm sure he'll do well. But I think the time to sell is now. And you might miss a small bump. He comes up, he hits two home runs, or the Cubs go on a miracle ride and they go to the playoffs, and maybe even they win a World Series. And you miss a little upside. But look at Buster Posey. Look at Mike Trout. Look at Bryce Harper. Look at Steven Strasburg. Look at all these players. Look at Derek Jeter. If Derek Jeter cards, I mean, how many championships did he win? Talk about good-looking guys. Talk about avoiding any kind of real controversies in your whole career. Talk about playing for a popular team. Talk about having collectors that can afford whatever they want for their cards. It all lines up perfectly for Derek Jeter, and I can afford a Derek Jeter autograph if I want one. Everybody listening to this show, if you really wanted a Derek Jeter autograph, you could afford one. I mean, yeah, it's going to cost you some money, but it's not millions of dollars. It's not hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's not life-changing money. I guess that's what I'm getting to. And I can understand that. So if you have a Chris Bryant card and you don't want to sell it, or you're thinking about selling it, you're not sure, it's not life-changing money. Sure, the Super Fractor, whatever it sold for, upper five figures, that's decent money. I don't call that life-changing money. Sure, if you're broke and you have no money, $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 is going to be a lot of money, but it's not going to last you the rest of your life. And a $300 Chris Bryant or $400 Chris Bryant, it's not, you know, if I had one, I might be too lazy to sell it too. But that, I just want to get you guys in the mindset. Again, this podcast, I know sometimes I get on here and I'm like, hey, you're dumb for pre-ordering National Treasures. Hey, you're dumb for buying this. Hey, but I want to, maybe I'm a little over the top, but I want to get you guys in the mindset of a long-term collector, long-term sustainable collector. There's a lot of people in this hobby that say, hey, buy this. Hey, Panini sent me this box and I opened it up and it's great. Guys, go buy it. Or, hey, I didn't pay for it, but, hey, I got four inserts and a sticker auto for $90. Guys, check it out. There's a lot of people in this hobby that just kind of regurgitate the next set that comes out that almost always goes down in value. And there's a reason why this hobby has just continued to lose collectors year over year, because intelligent people don't put up with this stuff. They don't put up with coming out with a $400 box that doesn't even have a wide receiver that's not even that good. Or a quarterback that didn't even really have that good of a season. Teddy Bridgewater's season wasn't even close to what Robert Griffin did, Andrew Luck did, and certainly someone like Russell Wilson. And certainly someone like Andy Dalton, who people hate on, but he's been to the playoffs 4 years in a row. we're not talking, you know, generational type athletes here. Teddy Bridgewater and Odell Beckham. Some of you guys are going to be listening to this in the archives a year, two, 3 years later, and you're going to be like, wow, people really cared that much about Odell Beckham and Teddy Bridgewater? In 2 months, you guys aren't going to give a crap about them. Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota and Todd Gurley and Jay Ajayi are going to be who you care about. So I just want, you know, the point of this podcast is to develop you into a sustainable collector. If you're buying Chris Bryant at the height of the market, you're going to get burned. Just like if you bought, even Jordan cards were hotter at one point in his career. Jeter cards were hotter at one point in his career. Buster Posey cards were hotter at one point in his career. Madison Bumgarner cards were hotter 3 months ago. Sell when people are greedy, buy when people are fearful, especially in the stock market, especially in blue chip stocks. To wrap around to the first argument, the first thing I talked about today, like I said, you're not going to get Disney and Apple stock and Google stock unless something really weird happens at those companies, really bad. I don't want to say this, but if Disneyland gets blown up, or if, you know, they come out with flop movie after flop movie, or if Google loses its, you know, ability to, you know, search engines kind of become obsolete for some reason. There becomes a better way to search for something on the internet. I could see that. But the odds of that happening is probably not that good, but There'll be Ebola cases. There'll be the measles will break out at Disneyland, or Google will lose, the Apple. They won't be the default search engine on Apple, and people will get fearful and they'll sell it off. And that's when you want to buy. And then when everybody says, hey, everything's great, it couldn't be any better. And, that's probably when you want to sell. And that might be right now. Might be right now with the stock market. It's at an all-time high. Companies like Google and Disney and Nike, they're all flying high right now. But they've been flying high for the last 20 years. So, I mean, in the case of like something like Nike. Last topic. Touching on vintage cards a little bit more. I want to touch a little bit more. I wanted to do this on the last show that we had, the show before the last, or I can't remember exactly when it was, but I want to touch on, I think about four vintage basketball cards. There's actually more than this, but I think of a core, if you're looking for like a really core group of basketball cards to put in a box and leave there, and then, you know, I hear a lot of people say, hey, I want to give my cards to my kids. I don't have kids, but I know a lot of, like, I spend time at schools. I know kids of all ages, kindergarten to eighth grade to high school and up. Most of them don't care about cards. If their parents were to pass and leave them, or, you know, pass down something to them, cards would be very, very far from what they would want. So I want you guys to think about that. You know, I hear a lot of guys, I want to leave these to my kids. Think about it. Your kids probably don't really want the card. They're going to go and sell them. They're not going to sit there and worship them and love them like you did. Chances are they didn't even see any of those guys play. And if you do leave cards to your kids, the only thing that's going to impress them are ones that are worth a lot of money. If you give them box after box and box of sticker auto and $1 serial insert card, they're not going to care. They're not going to care, guys. Period. So give up that dream of, oh, I want to leave these to my kids. Oh, you know. Unless it's a $20,000 Mickey Mantle card. unless it's a $10,000 Michael Jordan card or a $10,000 LeBron James exquisite auto. If it's something like that, I'm pretty sure they're going to care. But they're not going to care that it's a piece of cardboard. They're going to look at it in monetary value. So if you're going to leave stuff to your kids, I strongly recommend you buying good stuff. Buying stuff that's going to hold its value and still have the prestige and kind of love that people have for it today. And it's not going to be Chris Bryant. It's not going to be Odell Beckham Jr. It's not going to be Teddy Bridgewater. It's not. Period. In basketball, I think you could go after a couple different cards. First of all, I think it's the 86 Fleer, which was kind of the first Main Street set in a while. I think Topps had either lost a license or had no interest in doing basketball cards. I don't really know the whole backstory there, but they kind of went away. Star did some cards. Star Company did some cards for a while. And there's some Jordan, you know, Beckett and the magazines out there refer to them XRC for whatever reason. Really, they're rookie cards. It's just, you know, they want you to believe that they're not. So the hobby in general has kind of accepted the 86 Fleer as kind of a lot of people's rookie cards. Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, John Stockton, James Worthy, countless, Reggie Miller, I believe. There's countless number of players in there that's a rookie card. And I think obviously the Jordan in there is, you know, one of the holy grail of cards. Beware of fake Michael Jordan rookie cards. I would likely lean toward one that's already been professionally authenticated. Just to, you know, not that it's authentic or not that it's the grade that it says, but at least it gives you some minor, comfort that it might be authentic and it might be the grade that's on the card. Wouldn't overpay for that kind of stuff, but I think it's better than buying just one raw, unseen, unexamined. I think the Jordan Fleer card is an absolute just staple. If you want to build a vintage basketball card collection, that's probably the first one you want. Those are not particularly rare, but not particularly cheap, especially in very good condition. So I think if you're not interested in spending thousands, you can find one in a lower condition and you do just fine. I don't think they're gonna, the lower condition ones are obviously always going to be worth a little bit less, but I think they'll go up in value as the other ones go up in value, as the better condition ones. The Bird Irving Magic card. Not exactly sure what year, maybe 80, 70, something. I can't remember what year Topps that was. But you're all aware. It's the card that basically kind of is perforated almost and you can cut them apart or whatever, and many people did. That card in lower end condition can be had for in the $200 range and all the way up from there. But certainly relatively affordable. I'd much rather have, instead of buying $200 box of crapshoot, basically, that the companies are putting out today, a lot of the boxes are $200. Hey, you could have one of the best basketball cards ever made. And what I like about the Bird Irving Magic is it's a multi collectible card. Magic Johnson collectors want it. Larry Bird collectors want it. Certainly for the most part. So I like that card because it's kind of a dual. I think it's going to continue to go on. Magic Johnson is one of my greatest heroes. I hated Larry Bird growing up, but I have the utmost respect for him now. And I think that's only going to continue, even with the next generation. I never saw Mickey Mantle play, but I have a lot of respect for him. I never saw Willie Mays play, but I have a lot of respect for him. None of us saw Babe Ruth play, but we have a lot of respect for him. And I think Magic Johnson, while maybe they're not in Babe Ruth's category, there's certainly Magic Johnson and Larry Bird will certainly be in that Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays type, to compare him to like a baseball player, will be in that kind of regard for even people that never saw them play. If you want to go back further, I think Jordan and Bird Irving Magic is kind of more, I wouldn't say modern, but kind of semi-modern. basketball card, where it's not very difficult to find. They're not very rare. So if you want to get a little further back where the cards are a little bit more rare and certainly much harder to find in very nice condition, 1961 Fleer Wilt Chamberlain, I believe, is considered his rookie card, and those can be had for, in lower condition, about $500 all the way up to into the thousands for obviously really, really nice examples. I think there's other Wilt Chamberlain cards too, far cheaper, anything after 61, even in somewhat decent condition, you can have for some. I saw ones on eBay selling for under $100. I think those would be very nice additions to your collection. If you don't want to go, I can understand $500 is a lot of money. $200 for a Magic Johnson card is a lot of money. But there's a lot of, not a lot, but there are some Wilt Chamberlain cards that you can have for under $100, under $50, even certified graded, I saw for under $50. Really nice cards. Really, really nice cards. And I think cards that will hold their value. Wilt Chamberlain, I think, again, not many of us saw him play. Almost none of you probably listening to this podcast saw him play or remember him playing. But Wilt Chamberlain has this kind of mythical, almost Babe Ruth kind of aura about him, to where he scored 100 points in a game, and he was tall, and he was a little bit like the Babe Ruth of basketball. And I think that legend will keep carrying on with him. And I think his cards, even, you know, to the next generation, will still appreciate someone like Wilt Chamberlain. Certainly because there's, you know, while people have taken steroids in baseball and matched and beaten Babe Ruth's records, his records, what he did way back, a long, long, long time ago, is still unmatched. You know, outside of getting, you know, doing HGH or getting Balco to help you out, his records are still not being matched by, you know, almost every baseball player that's ever played. And I think Wilt Chamberlain will do that as well. His records will stand likely forever, because there's just, even someone like Shaquille O'Neal couldn't touch his records, and Shaq was unguardable. They had to change the rules of basketball for Shaq. And I think people, you know, I can understand most people hated Shaq, but Shaq changed the way basketball is played and was played. And same with Wilt Chamberlain. Same with Babe Ruth. Last one, Bill Russell. I'm a Lakers fan, so it's tough for me to talk about Celtic players in high regard. But Bill Russell's held in very, very, very high regard. He was a very, very successful basketball player. His 1957 Topps, going way back, in somewhat decent condition, $500 plus. You're looking at well into $1,000 for one in very nice condition. I would consider those four cards kind of the cornerstone of your collection. If you have a decent amount of money, if you want to spend, you know, a couple $1,000s on vintage basketball cards, I think I would start with those four. Then I would go from there. If you're on the lower end, if you're like me and you don't want to spend more than $100 or $50 on a card, I think you can find some Magic Johnsons. You can find some Larry Birds. You can find some Michael Jordans. You can find some Wilt Chamberlains. You can find some Bill Russells that you can have for affordably. And I think you can branch off from there. You can buy some more Michael Jordans. You can buy some people like, John Stockton, I think, had a really nice career. Charles Barkley had a nice career. I wouldn't spend a lot of money on those guys, but I think the next generation, I think Kobe Bryant will be, once he retires and leaves the game. I know his autographs have kind of been flooded and kind of been overproduced the last few years. I think obviously LeBron James, and maybe moving forward, will move into this group of kind of core basketball players. But I think of Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, and Bill Russell kind of as that core group. I think you could squeeze Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in there. I don't think he's as popular off the court or with a broad group of people, but you can certainly collect his vintage cards. I think there's a lot of players you can kind of get in there, you know, and mix it up. Pete Maravich and some other guys, but But I think I've given you some things to go on there. Our show, that's about all I have on today's show. So I appreciate everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for all the emails. I'm way behind. I'm probably a month behind. I'm trying to catch up. I'm still getting back to people that emailed me probably 3 or 4 weeks ago. So if you emailed me recently, I apologize. I may not have gotten back to you in a timely manner. I promise that I will. And if I don't, please resend me the email. My emails tend to get buried a little bit, and I have to go through and I have to delete a bunch of them to kind of bring the ones back up to the top. If you know how Gmail works, that's kind of how it is. I probably should flag them and put them in a folder so I can go back to them. Maybe I should do that in the future. You can always get at me on Twitter at SportsCardRadio. And that's about it. I posted an article, the latest thing I've done on cards, that I posted an article about kind of promoting your website. And I know there's a lot of questions about that, driving traffic to your website, using eBay. I think I talked about it a little bit on the last show, using eBay kind of as your funnel, kind of funneling people that are viewing your eBay auction, get them to view your website, or get people that buy your auctions on eBay, get them to then reorder on your website so you don't have to pay these 10% final value fees and whatever other fees eBay wants you to charge, even PayPal fees. You can find a credit card processor that'll process it cheaper than PayPal. So you can start avoiding those fees. And people might say, oh, 10% here and there, it's not a lot. Yeah, it is. Over the course of the year, I gave an example in the article I wrote. If you just do $1,000 in sales in a month, which is, you know, a lot for if you're just a casual guy, sell on eBay. If you pull cards and you're kind of a collector and occasionally you let a card go on eBay for whatever reason, just sell on eBay. Don't worry about cross-selling to a website. Don't worry about collecting the information of the customer. Just, I mean, like if I were to sell a card on eBay now, I would just sell it and I wouldn't care. But 10 years ago when I was selling, more than that, 13 years ago now when I first started getting on eBay in 2002, in fact, I was on there before that. I was a buyer, I think, starting in 1998, actually, I think, is when I first started. You better believe I was trying to drive people, even way back in 2002 when it was like $30 for a domain. It wasn't $9.99 at GoDaddy to buy a domain. It was a lot more expensive. It was a lot harder to set up a website. I was doing it back then. So I suggest all of you out there, if you're a serious seller, or you're considering being a serious seller, you're never, ever, ever, ever going to make a lot of money just selling on eBay. You need to broaden your scope. And there's a lot of ways to do that. If you want a link to that article, you can get at me. There's also, if you just go to our homepage, sportscardradio.com, and click on Insider Hobby Tips, you'll see it right there in that list of article, how to drive traffic to your website or something like that. It should be the first one on the list or one of the first ones on the list. But that's about it, folks. Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back some other time, some other place. We'll have some interview guests on. I'll talk about the card show that I'll go to. I'll keep giving my stock tips. Again, if you're reading my Twitter and reading, again, I was contacted by a financial website to start writing. All I write about are very, very, very speculative stocks that have a great chance at going to zero. And I'm only investing in them. Like the other day, one of them went up like 50 or 60 or 60, 70% or something in one day. And then it went back down. But I didn't buy that company. I didn't invest in that company to go up 50%, 60%. Trust me, in my tax bracket, a 50% win, 60% win, even a 70% win, honestly, not going to do me a whole lot. Not going to do me a whole lot. I invest in very, very speculative companies to go 200%, 1,000%, 2,000%. That's what I invest in, very speculative companies. And again, it's only a small portion of my overall investment. I have very, very boring investments, very boring ETFs, very boring mutual funds, very boring, quote, boring companies like Apple and Disney and Google and AT&T. and companies that pay off dividends and don't really grow a whole lot on the top line or the bottom line, but they consistently deliver for shareholders either through a dividend or through kind of their market dominance, kind of like an AT&T. But I take a portion of my portfolio to make it interesting. Again, it gets boring to just put your money in mutual funds. It gets boring to just do ETFs, even if you have a lot of money in them. It gets boring. It's not that fun. So I take risk with a very small portion of my overall wealth, and I invest in very speculative, very small companies that almost nobody knows about. In fact, most of the times when I'm writing about it, I'm one of the only unaffiliated people that are not affiliated with the company that are actually writing about it, that are actually researching it and doing a lot of research and doing a lot of due diligence, as they like to call it. And if you're into the stock market now, get into that. Do some due diligence on some small company. It keeps it interesting. Don't put 40% of your portfolio into a stock that's $1.50. But put 1% of your portfolio in it. It makes it more exciting. Trust me, when a stock goes up, I had a stock go up 90% in one day. That's exciting. I went out to dinner. I took my wife out to dinner. I didn't make any money because I didn't sell it. But it was like validation. It's exciting to find a company that nobody knows about, and then an event happens that causes a lot more people to find out about it. It's exciting. Whether or not you sell it and make money or not, I went out to dinner that night. And I encourage you all to do that as well. It's a lot like prospecting. I kind of compare penny stocks and very speculative companies to prospecting. Not the number one picks. It's easy to pick out the Chris Bryants and the guys like that that are drafted number one. But it's the 17th round guy. It's the 9th round guy that comes up that nobody knows about. Now he's a big player. Keeps it exciting. I encourage you all to do that as well. I encourage you all to invest money up to the edge to where it makes you nervous. Invest up to the edge where it makes you nervous in really good companies. Don't do that with penny stocks. Don't misconfuse. I don't want anyone to confuse what I'm saying. Do not overinvest or do not put too much money into a penny stock, a speculative stock. That is the easiest way to lose money. Trust me, I say that from experience. I've lost money in many, many companies, mainly biotech, cure cancer type companies, and I will not do that again. I do not invest in medical device, medical, you know, pills or whatever, surgeries, you know, I don't invest in those companies anymore. Because you can lose all your money very quickly. And same with prospecting. You guys wouldn't put all your money or all your extra collecting money into a prospect that was drafted in the 9th round and comes off the bench in single A. You wouldn't do that. So don't misconstrue what I'm saying. To compare it to cards, if you're going to have a portfolio, buy Michael Jordan, buy Derek Jeter, buy Magic Johnson, buy Mickey Mantle. I like to buy the guys that are dead and gone. Michael Jordan could still kill somebody. Magic Johnson could run somebody over. You know, they could say something really racist or really turn a lot of the country off. They could Aaron Hernandez people. Something really weird can happen if you're alive. But if you're Mickey Mantle and Babe Ruth, you're long gone. Wilt Chamberlain, you're long gone. There's nothing but kind of the mythical figure. And it's hard to say bad things about people that are gone. It's hard to say bad things about Mickey Mantle. It's hard to say bad things about, Babe Ruth. They weren't perfect. I'm sure they drank under the table and did all kinds of stuff. Might not have been faithful to their wives and all kinds of stuff, but hey, they're gone. All we remember are their home runs and their base hits and their World Series. So I recommend building a portfolio of cards of blue chips. That's what your kids are going to want. That's what's going to matter to them when you pass it down. They're not going to give a crap about Teddy Bridgewater or Odell Beckham. And the same thing goes with stocks. Nobody's going to care about some tiny little company, Digimarc, or something like that. They're going to care about Apple and Google and Facebook. I don't know about Facebook. Facebook's still a little young. Facebook's still a little new for me. But there's companies that have been around a long time that you might, that are a little bit like Michael Jordan, a little bit like Derek Jeter. They've been around. They're great. They're going to continue to be great. So on that note, I hope you are great out there. Thanks for tuning in all the way to the end. I really sincerely appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. We wouldn't be doing this show, and I say we. It's not just me on here talking to myself. It's all of you that have contacted me over the years, over the last couple months, over on Twitter, on Facebook. I've met many of you, numerous people I've met through this podcast. So I really, really appreciate it. And that's why I keep doing this. I don't run any ads. I turn down every email I get. Please promote this, or here, I'll send you a box. And can you talk about it? Can you do this for me? Blah, 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 blah. I turn that all down. Because none of that matters to me. What matters is you listening right now. You, the listener, whether you're on a jog, whether I can get you through work, I can get you through your commute to and from work or to and from whatever, or I can put you to bed at night. I listen to podcasts at night. That's like the ultimate compliment, is that I put your podcast on at night to go to sleep to. I actually sleep halfway through it, but I can't do that for a lot of podcasts. So I appreciate wherever I fall in that spectrum, I really appreciate you listening. And I don't want that to, I may sound negative on here. I may talk down to people, may sound like I'm talking down to people. I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to create sustainable collectors. I'm trying to keep you in this hobby forever, for as long as you can live, for as long as you have money that you can afford buying cards. And even if you can't afford cards, it's okay to take a break. Said that on this show lots of times. Can't tell you how many stretches, even doing this podcast, there's been stretches where I didn't buy a thing. I wasn't even buying and selling on Check On My Cards much. It's okay to take a break. It's okay to take a breather, but I want to keep you in this hobby for a long time. I want you to then pass that knowledge down to somebody else, whether it's your kids or a fellow collector. Pass it down so we can create much longer term collectors, and then we'll have more people in this hobby, more people buying cards. The collection that you already have will start going up in value and not down in value. And that's the key. I hope you all are doing well out there. Maybe I'll see some of you this weekend in San Francisco, or I don't know when it is. Real soon, I hope to see some of you. Thanks for tuning in. We are out of here.